It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
To my mind, the most offensive part of the whole zombie debt industry is its premise, that they can take debt that by definition is past its time, or bankrupted, or otherwise subject to a pretty clear defense, and turn it into real money. And they do that in perfect and knowing risk-taking that they will be in violation of the law the whole way. And here's the syllogism by which that occurs. If you're a debt buyer, by definition, the debt you're buying is already in default. And that makes you a debt collector within the meaning of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. If you are a debt collector, then the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act forbids you from either suing or even threatening to bring suit on time-barred debt.
Henry Woodward from the Legal Aid Society of Roanoke Valley tells strange but true tales about how dead debts come back from the grave to haunt the living, and the nasty debt collection surprises that await people who have been overpaid unemployment compensation are revealed during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 117, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. A congressional proposal to cut $75 million from the Legal Services Corporation, or LSC, budget would decimate civil legal aid to low-income Americans at a time when it is most needed by the tens of millions suffering economic hardship. The proposed $75 million funding cut would represent a 14% decline from LSC's current funding level of $420 million. The proposed cutback was announced last month by the House Appropriations Committee as part of its continuing resolution to fund federal agencies and programs through the remainder of fiscal year 2011. The impact of the proposed reduction at the midpoint of a fiscal year would be devastating to the 136 nonprofit legal aid programs across the nation that receive LSC funding. The proposed cut could result in the layoffs of at least 300 legal aid staff attorneys. Programs would be forced to turn away cases except for those involving immediate issues of safety and security, and many programs serving rural areas would be forced to close offices. Since the 2008 recession, LSC-funded programs have been overwhelmed with requests for legal assistance by low-income Americans. The current continuing resolution expires March 4, 2011. In other news, the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is actively seeking suggestions and ideas on what they can be doing to better help consumers. The staff of the Bureau are looking for messages through their website, emails, tweets, and even YouTube video submissions. The central mission of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is to make markets for consumer financial products and services work for Americans, whether they are applying for a mortgage, choosing among credit cards, or using any number of other consumer financial products. The Bureau will work to promote financial education, enforce federal consumer financial laws, and ensure that consumers get the information they need to make the financial decisions they believe are best for themselves and their families, that prices are clear up front, that risks are visible, and that nothing is buried in fine print. In a market that works, consumers should be able to make direct comparisons among products, and no provider should be able to build or feel pressure to build a business model around unfair, deceptive, or abusive practices. Any idea that is within their area of control will be seriously considered. For more information, go to www.consumerfinance.gov. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Brown versus Board of Education. This U.S. Supreme Court case combined four separate appeals. The Brown case appealed from the U.S. District Court for the District of Kansas. Briggs v. Elliott appealed from the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of South Carolina. Gebhardt v. Belton appealed from the Supreme Court of Delaware. And Davis v. County School Board of Prince Edward County, Virginia, appealed from the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia. In the Kansas, South Carolina, and Virginia cases, Black students seeking admission to public schools on a non-segregated basis had been denied because their segregated Black schools were found to be separate but equal. In 1954, the unanimous U.S. Supreme Court ruled that segregated schools were not equal and could not be made equal, thereby integrating public education. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Brown v. Board of Education is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. It's time once again for this week's question and answer. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Hi, my name is Janet, and I'm located in Richmond, Virginia.
Welcome to the show, Janet. What question do we have this week?
Well, I was recently approved for unemployment. However, my employer decided to file an appeal, and I'm now with an attorney and in the process of an appeal. And I'm trying to find out, I have a question that concerns overpayment. I was recently informed in writing that if the appeal is not found possible, that you're responsible for paying the Virginia Unemployment Commission back. And I'm just trying to figure out why is that so.
Well, Janet, that's a good question. And what you have been told by the Virginia Employment Commission is correct. If you become entitled to benefits and actually receive benefits, and then there is an appeal filed, and the decision is ultimately reversed, and that reversal becomes a final decision after all appeals have been exhausted, then yes, the benefits that you got that you weren't entitled to become an overpayment, and you are legally responsible to pay those back. Now, I wouldn't worry about that because, first of all, I think you have a good case, but second of all, if you are found to have been overpaid, the Virginia Employment Commission first will offer to enter into voluntary arrangements for you to repay the overpayment pretty much on a schedule that you can afford. And as long as you do that, there won't be any collection efforts. However, if you don't do that, if you ignore the Virginia Employment Commission after they have decided you have been overpaid because you got benefits that you were not entitled to and all of your appeals have been exhausted, then the Virginia Employment Commission can collect it one of three different ways. First of all, they can file a lawsuit against you and get a judgment, and then they can garnish your future wages or bank account the same as they collect any judgment. Secondly, they can intercept your federal or state income tax refund, which comes as a nasty surprise to folks. The third is an even nastier surprise, which is if you become entitled to unemployment compensation in the future, you lost a future job through no fault of your own, and you think you're going to get that weekly check, the Virginia Employment Commission will withhold 100% of your future benefits until you have paid back the debt that you owe them on the overpayment. So that's why it's really important to enter into voluntary arrangements to repay an overpayment if one is even declared. Is this the information you were looking for, and does this sort of satisfy your mind?
Yes, this information is very helpful. Unfortunately, it's very hard to swallow, but you know what? I'm glad I found out today just how all of this plays out.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show. Night of the Living Debt may sound like a grade B Hollywood horror movie, but it's an increasingly real nightmare faced by millions of consumers. Henry Woodward from the Legal Aid Society of Roanoke Valley tells strange but true tales about how dead debts come back from the grave to haunt the living.
I'm going to give you a little history about my interest in zombie debt. I got exercised about it about 3 years ago when I got a referral from Florida, a Florida legal aid person who's client had been garnished in Florida. It seems that the garnishment was based on a judgment obtained by a Roanoke lawyer in Roanoke, where the client had never been in her life, on a debt owned by an Ohio debt buyer that was originated somewhere else in Virginia 22 years ago. And it seems that it came out of a car lease that the former Virginia resident had before she moved to Florida and thought had been taken care of literally decades ago. And unbeknownst to her, this judgment had been entered in Virginia, in a place where she had never lived, with faulty service in Florida. And it all came as a terrible surprise to her and to her Social Security. And that's all too common. That's just the way these things go. We were able to, by kind of following the curious threads of this case, to turn about a $6,000 deficit into for her a $5,000 fair debt collection recovery, which was quite satisfying. But it struck me that something was wrong with the way we're looking at these cases in the legal aid context. Now, part of that is, as you know, is a matter of survival. We have to do a lot of triage. And one of the things that we customarily have been doing was to not look too seriously at cases against people who are judgment-proof because, you know, it doesn't make that much difference. At not looking too seriously at cases where people admitted that they probably had a credit card debt somewhere in the past. And by avoiding those sort of overwhelming numbers, which could put us under if we took them too seriously, we were sort of missing the elephant that Tom has so eloquently described of a collection industry run amok. And at the last statewide session last year, I raised the possibility of several folks who were interested forming a task force to look at the problem of zombie debt, just to see what we could do in Virginia to address that. And that small group of interested people, I recognize close among us here, Robin Edwards and Jason Crumbine, and there were several others as well, started accumulating materials and examples and exploring what had been done and could be done in Virginia to address this problem. And we came up with a package that is in your CD and available from VPLC online as well, that runs through five categories of response to what I'll call the zombie debt problem. The first part of the package addresses how you get the documents, and as a result of a lot of contributions by people around the state, we have good examples of subpoenas and bills of particulars and other ways to get the documents you need. We have another section on how to defend against the failings of the proof of assignment or proof of the debt, which Tom has talked about. We have a section on defending these things on the statute of limitations, which is a very powerful defense here for reasons I will go into. We have a section describing and giving examples of how you can file counterclaims in general district court proceedings under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, where it's clear that there is a problem. And finally, we have some suggestions and insight on bringing federal fair debt suits to address these things. I'm grateful for the effort a lot of people have put into this over time, but it's time we did something about it. And I think what probably ought to happen, my sense of what could happen without totally miscuing our resources, is that every legal services office in the state ought to have somebody who's doing this. It doesn't take a whole lot of work. You've got the mechanics in the package of addressing it on several different levels. Lord knows you've got a ton of clients who, if you look closely, are the classic zombie debt victims. And by making a little bit of a dent in most of the general district courts around the state, we could really have a substantial impact, I think, on the industry of collecting zombie debt in Virginia. To my mind, the most offensive part of the whole zombie debt industry is its premise that they can take debt that by definition is past its time or bankrupted or otherwise subject to a pretty clear defense and turn it into real money. And they do that in perfect and knowing risk-taking that they will be in violation of the law the whole way. And here's the syllogism by which that occurs. If you're a debt buyer, by definition, the debt you're buying is already in default. And that makes you a debt collector within the meaning of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. If you are a debt collector, then the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act forbids you from either suing or even threatening to bring suit on time-barred debt. That's not expressed in the Act itself, but the 1987 classic case of Kimber versus Federal Financial Corporation, a Alabama federal court case, has made that the law for these 20-some years. And it's pretty clearly the law of fair debt collection practices. The impact of that is that any time that a debt buyer brings a case to court that is an ancient case, they are doing so knowing that not only the debt buyer themselves, but also the debt buyer's lawyer is in violation of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. So what that means is the whole industry rides on a sort of a systematic flouting of the law. That ought to at least be troubling. It's certainly troubling to our clients. It's troubling to most of us when we think about it, and I'm confident that it's troubling to most of the judges who are called upon to hold their noses and enter judgments in these cases. The reason it works, notwithstanding the obvious illegality of it, is default judgments. The FTC report that Tom gave you pieces of contains a sort of consensus estimate that something like 90% of collection actions go to default judgment. And that's probably true for zombie debt collection in Virginia as well. And it is so easy for somebody who is challenged, an attorney or apparent attorney, as Tom would have us label these folks, who's bringing a case to just dismiss it if there's any challenge to it. And that happens time and again. I mean, it's the common experience of most attorneys in legal services who who make even the slightest effort to defend these things. They just don't want to argue about them. And Tom has given you a pretty good explanation of why, on the merits, they don't want to have to explain why they have a claim. But I have found, even more convincingly, they just don't want to argue about the statute of limitations. I should go on to say the obvious, that zombie debt, the name we have given to this horrendous collection practice, is not all debt buyer debt. Our task force has sort of adopted the name in order to control the sort of perception of what we're talking about, because it really does have that offensive a character when it when you're talking about debt that's back from the grave or has been disinterred. But not all debt buyer debt necessarily has those qualities. And so when proceeding against debt buyers, you do have to be a little bit careful about whether it really is zombie debt before making some of the assumptions that I'll describe. I think what I have noticed is that there is an increasing tendency of many large account generators, credit card issuers and other folks, to pass debt along sooner than they used to the debt buying industry. It may be that we're nearing the end of the era in which the credit card companies cleaned out their back drawers of debt. But there's still a lot of it out there that is really old. It's just that you can't necessarily assume that it is anymore. If you get to the point of getting access to the portfolio descriptions by which that debt was bought, you may well be told right there how old the debt is supposed to be, because that's a major factor in the pricing of the portfolios of debt that are sold. The focus that I would like to see us take in the next year is on the issue of the time bar of the statute of limitations. It is the heart of things, because it gives us the leverage of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act as a response. And that's a powerful leverage. In the last year, I have, I think, in three or four cases, brought counterclaims or filed a separate claim in one case on the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act in general district court in most cases. And they settled very quickly, because the very narrow range of lawyers who specialize in this debt know what their vulnerabilities are. And they knew from the outset they were taking a calculated risk. And they know when they've been called on it. And they just don't want to spend additional resources in fighting about it. That would be too much like lawyering. And this is really not so much lawyering, I think, for the collection bar.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 4.1, which is the Alcoholic Beverage Control Act. If you drive drunk, you can lose your driver's license. But did you know you also can lose your right to buy alcoholic beverages? You can. Code of Virginia 4.1-333 allows a circuit court, after notice and opportunity for a hearing, to issue an order of interdiction prohibiting the sale of alcoholic beverages to any person convicted of driving while intoxicated or who has shown himself to be an habitual drunkard. Although the statute does not precisely define the term habitual drunker, a 1981 court case found it was not unconstitutionally vague as applied to a particular person. In light of that person's admitted alcoholism for 14 years and 59 conviction of public drunkenness in slightly more than 2 years. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral for, all.net. Then click the contributor link. Then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The Obama administration's foreclosure prevention program has been so troubled that scammers have had a field day. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, Yolanda McGill, Senior Counsel for Fair Housing and Fair Lending with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, explains the Loan Modification Scam Prevention Network, a powerful new tool for rooting out foreclosure rescue scams. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright. Oh.